Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Elena's playing with the foam walls. She's like,
I was zoned out. And then she starts talking, hey guys. And I'm like, oh, we're on.
We're on part two. Should we just get back into it? No chit chat.
Yeah, come on.
So where we left for part one, if you've decided to take a little break, you know, stretch your legs, mm-hmm. maybe go get something to eat.
Put on some chapstick.
Maybe it's been a couple days and you're just now getting to part two. Where we left off was, you know, the Durham family had been murdered. The day after the murders, the sales manager and his wife went up to the dealership to just prepare the ambiance. Yes. They knew that everybody was going to be coming in. Some of them may have gotten word by then, but most of them were not going to know what was going on. Mm-hmm. And so they just wanted to kind of be there to explain.
For support.
Exactly. And also figure things out, because now that Bryce and Virginia are dead, what's going to happen with the dealership?
Yeah.
Ooh. But they were unpleasantly surprised to find Troy Hall, who was Bryce's son-in-law, and his brother John waiting for the dealership to open. Mm. Tearing through there, going through cabinets and drawers and coat pockets, trying to find something. Troy was saying, that damn thing's around here somewhere, growing more peeved with every empty drawer that he opened. Ike's wife just thought it was strange.
That is very strange.
You know, she was like, I'm going to be a 70s housewife and stay out of this. But this is weird.
Like, I can't turn my head at this.
Right. So they were a little bit interested as to why hours after the murders, these two goons are, you know, going in there like they own the joint.
Yeah.
Not long after arriving, Troy asked for the keys to the dealership.
And what?
Yeah. Ike was like, listen, I mean, there's nothing. What am I going to do? He's the son-in-law.
No.
The son has died. And so he figured, you know, they're in charge now. Like, I don't
know.
At least for the time being.
Okay.
So Ike did keep one key off of the ring, though.
Good job.
And that was Bobby's car ring. Bobby's car key. Because he knew that Bobby hated Troy. And he's like, not even over Bobby's dead body.
Yeah.
Are you getting the key to his car?
Wow.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
So Bryce's brother arrived in Boone just after 7 in the morning. And they, along with the other wives and brother-in-law, immediately went to the Boone. The Boone Police Department. They wanted answers, but they also wanted to urge police to look at the person that they suspected to be involved in the murders, and that was Troy Hall. Maybe not just Troy, but maybe Jenny as well. One of her family members reported Jenny saying, you know, they just couldn't accept Troy while she's supposed to be grieving her parents' death.
Uh-huh.
And they raised eyebrows.
Like that's what you're worried about?
I know. And she may have been saying it in passing, but it's just like, that's not the time or place to really be talking about that. But they raised eyebrows even further when Jenny and Troy went into the dealership the morning after the murders, after Troy got the keys.
Okay.
So a couple hours later, and they started taking things out. Troy boisterously announced that he was going to get this dealership on track, and everybody
like
should
it was
know.
Off track.
Right. He just went in there and was like, all right, they're dead. I'm getting this place into shape.
Wow.
Yeah. The employees felt very uncomfortable.
The audacity.
About this announcement. I mean, they're like, their bodies were not even cold yet. And you're coming up in here like,
Like you own the place.
Like you even know a thing about cars.
Or business.
Or business. The only business transaction he's done was probably a sale of weed.
Right.
So he nor Jenny had ever had anything to do with the car dealership. Mm. Ever. And like I said, she tried working there, but so they didn't know anything. The employees of the dealership were grieving themselves, and they felt like this whole thing was insensitive, like this whole coming in, announcing, and they saw Troy and Jenny making their way over to the service department, going in and out, like taking parts.
What?
Car parts and pieces, and yeah. The guys in the service station reported that Jenny was upbeat and flirty, and they found that really weird, considering her parents and brother had just been murdered hours before.
Oh my gosh.
This is giving Menendez brothers.
Oh yeah.
So the funeral for all three, Virginia, Bryce, and Bobby, was held on Sunday, February 6th. The community was confused, and they rallied together. Many of the funeral goers were neighbors, friends, family members, and business community members. Mm. Bryce Durham had had a lot of business associates over the years, and he had maintained great relationships with everyone. The burial service after the funeral had even more people. Upwards of 600 attendees watched as the three silver caskets were laid into the ground at Pleasant Home Baptist Church Cemetery. Days after the burial, the Durham's family friend and attorney, John Gardner, began looking for important estate information regarding the Durhams. So he's looking for, you know, wills and things of that nature, deeds. He had been appointed executor of Bryce and Virginia's estate and administrator of Bobby's estate because Bobby didn't have a will.
Mm.
But John couldn't find what he was looking for either. So, you know, he wasn't finding wills or deeds or anything to indicate distribution of where the estate, you know, proof of assets and where all of that was going to go. And without those documents, it was of course presumed that in the event that Virginia and Bryce's death, their two children would inherit everything. But of course, Bobby was dead, which led Jenny to inherit everything on her own. All three of the murdered Durhams held checkings and savings accounts. They had personal property, the home, the Buick dealership, of course, cars. Virginia and Bryce had a little debt, you know, as most people do, including their house wasn't paid off. Bryce owed $60,000 worth of stocks in the business, so they had to pay that out to his business partner in the bank. That they had to pay the bank that financed the home. But after all was said and done, Jenny inherited about $97,000 total. I did not compute that, but that it was a lot. It was a lot of money. Or should we say Jenny and Troy inherited that money because he was pacing back and forth waiting for those checks.
Oh, obviously.
You know, he was wearing a hole in that carpet.
Yeah.
Virginia and Bryce weren't Troy's parents, but he sure acted entitled to everything they left behind. When the Durham's home, the scene of the crime, was sold before the new homeowners were able to even sign on the dotted line, Troy wanted to take one last look in the home. And they're like, well, okay, but we're coming too. So they accompanied Troy on one last walkthrough of the home. And they watched as he was pulling out kitchen drawers. He was sticking his head inside the cabinets, clearly looking for something. They didn't know what he was looking for. Everyone found it a bit odd, but he didn't find anything, so he left.
Yeah.
Now, law enforcement from other areas of North Carolina came in to help the SBI and the Boone Police Department. Hundreds of fingerprints were collected from the Durham home. The GMC Jimmy that was found abandoned on the side of the road near the Durham's home was taken in for evidence.
Interesting.
Yes. They found a bag of silverware left in the car.
A bag of silverware.
Yeah, bag of silverware. Presumably taken in a robbery, but not actually taken. So Bryce Durham didn't seem to have any involvement in something that would have gotten him and his family into this type of trouble. And if he was, they were going to find out about it pretty soon. Mm-hmm. But there was nothing like that. There was nothing illegal or sketchy in Bryce's transactions at the dealership, no under the table side hustles or anything like that. Robbery didn't make sense because so much was left behind. What about the pieces of silverware? Like I said, that were in... Surely they would have taken that. Why didn't they steal the car?
Yeah, there was so much to be taken.
Yeah, so if robbery wasn't a motive, which it clearly is not, was it revenge? I mean, did someone hate the Durham family? And if that were the case, authorities believe Jenny might be in danger. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, someone's going to kill the whole family. They're after her next, right? Well, investigators were hard at work sorting through evidence, interviewing those in the Durham's microsystems, and building a timeline of the victim's movements of the day of the crime, even the days and weeks leading up to the crime. Not just the victim's movements, but also Troy's and Jenny's too. Mm-hmm. Neither of them was doing themselves any favor. Yeah. When it came to the cloud of suspicion that loomed over them heads. I mean, them heads. So let's go over the general timeline that detectives were able to put together. They learned that Bobby Joe had finished his class at the university around 5:20 p.m. He saw his friends. They chatted about maybe doing something later that night. They made loose plans. And then he went to the dealership to study, as he did most of the time after school. On this particular night, because the weather was so bad, Bobby planned to leave the dealership and ride home with his parents in that 4x4 mm-hmm. that his dad borrowed from the dealership. And from employees' accounts, they knew that Bryce left the dealership twice. Once to go take Jenny, you know, pick her up from work, take her home. Mm-hmm. And he also took one of his employees home that had lived just down the road. He's like, look, just leave your car here. I'll run you home.
Oh, okay.
I'll come back and get you tomorrow. Then Bryce left for that Rotary Club meeting. There's a pretty good account of Bryce's trip to Bowling Rock for that Rotary Club meeting because a friend and fellow Rotary Club member, Phil Vance, actually followed Bryce from the dealership at 6 p.m. to Appalachian Ski Mountain. So they were kind of carpooling, but not. The same time Bryce left the dealership, Virginia had spoken with her lawyer by phone about a tax issue, and she had mentioned to him that she had 14 hours of work staring her in the face.
Oh.
Phil Vance followed Bryce back to town after the meeting and witnessed Bryce turning into the parking lot of the dealership around 8:30 p.m., and Phil continued down the road towards his house. So we've got a pretty good timeline of when Bryce got back to the dealership to take his family home.
Right.
So when comparing the Durham's movements to others, like, I don't know, Jenny and Troy, they wouldn't find what they thought they might, because Bryce dropped Jenny off at her house, and by all accounts, she remained there until she ran to the store, came right back. Troy was seen by friends around 7:30 p.m. at a shopping center, and then again at 8 at his library's campus. At his campus library. Troy called his sister-in-law Kay to tell her that it was that phone call about he was having car trouble.
Oh, okay.
He said that he was at a service station because his car broke down. And while Kay confirmed that Troy did call her that night about the car, she said it was really quiet where he was, so she didn't know where he was calling from.
Didn't sound like it was a public
Didn't really place. Sound like a service station, but she couldn't be sure. And with no caller ID back then.
Right.
You know. So the time that the Durhams arrived home was sort of pieced together by neighbors who lived around the Durham home. Most of their accounts would be in line with what they were watching on TV that night, which was... You know, that's so 70s, isn't it? One gentleman said that it was about 9 o'clock when they got home because the 9 o'clock movie was about to start. Mm. And so he saw the Durhams pass by. Another neighbor said that she was cleaning dishes around 9 p.m. and her window above her sink faced the Durhams' home.
Oh, okay.
So pretty good timeline here.
Yes.
For the 70s. When you didn't have digital data.
Yeah.
What happened in the home and when was the real mystery. None of the neighbors heard anything, and, you know, not surprising because the house was what?
I'm just thinking.
Oh. I'm like, what? She's making this face like she's really critically thinking. So none of the neighbors heard anything. You know, there was a snowstorm outside. The houses were kind of spaced out. So each house was like surrounded in its own wind tunnel. They couldn't really hear anything. No screaming. No gunshot. Between 9 and 9:30 p.m., cousins Reed and Byrne, sounds like Bert and Ernie, kind of, turned onto the 105 bypass very near to the Durham home. They saw a car on the side of the road with three men standing next to it, and they were talking.
Oh.
And at first, these cousins thought about pulling over. They thought, oh, maybe they broke down. But then they saw the headlights of the car. They saw the wipers going.
Oh.
And they just assumed everything was fine. You know, the old good old bystander effect. Yeah. Someone else will stop and help them.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing they didn't stop. The cousins described the men, all three men, as white. Two of them were wearing really long army style coats and toboggans. And the third was wearing a waist length coat and hat. The next bit of information we have coming from the house was that phone call from Virginia.
Right.
A little after 10 p.m. And one of Jenny and Troy's neighbors saw them fiddling with their car about 10:15. So this does line up with a 10 p.m. phone call. They go out to their car. They're trying to get this car started. And then, of course, Cecil verified that they came over.
Right.
And then neighbors of the Durhams said that their dogs started barking about 10:20, a little after 10:20. One neighbor said they saw a green GMC Jimmy, the one that Bryce had borrowed from the dealership, leaving the Durham home literal minutes before Cecil, Troy, and Jenny arrived at the Durham driveway. Whoever took that GMC Jimmy from the Durham's home had ditched it pretty soon after. It was spotted at a gas station around 10:30. And then patrolmen Morgan and Hardwick passed the GMC abandoned on the side of the road. And that was before they got called in for the murders. The engine was running.
Oh.
The windshield wipers were on. And there was a bag of silverware left behind in the vehicle. So they stopped and looked, and they noticed a second set of tire prints behind this car. And so they're thinking, okay, someone's broken down. They've left their car here, and someone's come along and given them a ride. So they ride it up. It's not more suspicious than that until, of course, the murders. Later, a witness would place a black car behind the GMC. So this timeline, I mean, it's great. It's great and all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's essential, and they had for to sure. do it. But it didn't say much about who had done this.
Right.
They've got a timeline of events, but police were told by Troy that it was black men in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Now these cousins are saying it's white men conferring at this car that they believed that, you know, was probably associated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what they super could have been helpful. Wearing.
Yeah, exactly. So were they black? Were they white? 5 days after the murders, there was a break-in in Asheville, which is south of Boone, not too far. Four young men were arrested for the break-in, and they learned that these guys were part of like a little organized crime ring.
Oh.
So that seemed to pique their interest. They were working in shifts, breaking into homes around Asheville.
Wow.
Yeah. They like a couldn't
professional.
Right. So I'll take Sunday and you take Tuesday. But these guys were breaking into homes and they were stealing things like TVs and radios and nothing.
Not silverware.
Right. Not silverware. And nothing like that had been taken from the Durham home. The TV was there. You know, all their stuff was there. So when they were questioned about it, these guys were like, I don't know anything about that. And it wasn't me. And they just couldn't link these guys in any way, shape, or form to these crimes.
Yeah.
To the Durham murders. One of the first ideas police had to explore was that someone was disgruntled. Okay, so Bryce was a businessman. Maybe it was a former employer. Maybe it was a former employee. Mm-hmm. Either way, they were looking at this dealership to link Bryce to the trouble he found himself in, which kind of overlaps with another theory, a revenge killing. Were the murders in an effort to get back at the Durhams for something? Maybe it was a customer who bought a lemon from his dealership and got screwed and didn't get compensation, or, you know, they wouldn't let them return the car. Maybe it had nothing to do with the dealership at all, because Bryce had worked in other areas of the automotive industry as well. Remember, he had started his career in auto financing. When you get in, you know, money involved in anything, it could be a recipe for disaster.
For sure.
But ultimately, in tracing back relationships, they weren't able to find anything worthy of a triple homicide. There was no friction. There was no outstanding grudges. No one came forward to say, oh, you know, he had a problem with this guy, or this guy had a problem with him. Another theory that emerged was that the family was targeted because Bryce had turned someone in for scamming customers at another car dealership. So it was alleged that someone was rolling back miles on the cars before selling them to unwitting customers.
No.
You know, Ferris Bueller's Day Out type of stuff. Jenny Sue Hall Durham, whatever her name is, told the investigators that her dad had even done it himself, because Bryce would borrow cars from the dealership and he'd roll back the miles and put them back in the lot. No one's any the wiser.
Right.
Police did find a rollback machine. I don't know what they're called. I just, a rollback machine.
We'll call it that.
We'll call it that. In the service shop at Bryce's dealership after the murders. But there was the mechanic that worked in the shop was like, we never used it. Like, if something like that was going on, I would have known about it.
Right.
You wouldn't think that the owner of the dealership's in there hooking up cars.
Yeah.
And maybe he was, but there was no proof of it.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't find that Bryce was rolling back miles, and they couldn't put a finger on this supposed rollback ring that he had been privy to. I bet in the beginning that theory felt like it had some legs, you know?
Probably.
But it was ultimately dropped because there was just no evidence to support the claim. Neighbors and peripheral relationships, like people the Durhams might have only talked to when they ran into them at the grocery store, you know, they were, everything was scrutinized. Detectives waited for one of these people to stand out and lead them in one direction or another, but it never did. The Rotary Club that Bryce was a part of offered a $4,000 reward, which later grew to $17,000.
Oh, wow.
When other organizations pitched in to help, you know, for any information leading to the capture of these murders. A month after the murders, police were no closer to solving the mystery of what happened to the Durhams. They had run down every lead that had come in, which was thousands. They had reanalyzed every piece of physical evidence, you know, without DNA and other technology at their fingertips. Yeah. They were doing what they could. They pleaded with the public for assistance in solving the crime, which a month into investigation, you have nothing.
Yeah.
I'm like, good for you for asking for help and just saying, look, we need your help.
Yeah.
Instead of keeping quiet for months and months and months and months and months.
Yeah. And then losing vital information.
And that, time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So they did get thousands of tips.
They did. They had thousands of tips. I mean, the beauty about it was that they were able to put this timeline together.
Yeah.
They were able to follow this family, what they did that day, the amount of time they were at the dealership, when they went home, like the neighbors around them seeing cars come and go. I mean, it was pretty helpful. So Bryce's family was obviously very upset about losing him and Virginia and Bobby.
Yeah.
And even more upset that nobody was in custody yet. I mean, this was horrific. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, they died in a car accident. It was a snowy night. Someone came into their home and murdered them all and dunked them in the bathtub. In a brutal
way. Yeah. Yes.
So his cousin contacted, let me see if I can say this, Marius Bernardus Dykeshorn.
Okay.
He was a clairvoyant from Holland claiming to have ESP, who had actually assisted police in about 5 other cases in North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
He was even in talks to assist in the Jeffrey McDonald case from Fort Bragg, North Carolina, which we covered back in 2022. Can you believe
we were
that
around
it was,
back then?
Yes, we were around. So this guy didn't charge for his services, so why not? I mean, I can't say heck that yeah. I wouldn't be grasping at every straw, you know?
Right.
Nothing else had worked. Mm-hmm. Well, he couldn't help either. This didn't work either. Remember the Green Berets were in town? This is another weird connection to Jeffrey McDonald. But investigators started looking at these Green Berets because they were like, you know, this crime was so organized, so almost military-like.
Okay.
Executed, done up in the same way.
Yeah, that is interesting. And before you go any further, when you said that the cousins saw the men and they were wearing, a couple of them were wearing army pants, that's the first thing I thought were this group of Green Berets that you were talking about earlier.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So they looked into it. But again, what would the Green Berets want?
Right.
With Bryce Durham and his family. Motive? Like, what's the motive? A triple homicide? They just so happen to be in town. They're going to go kill a family. Like, come on. And what about the family rift between Jenny and her parents? Y'all are all sitting here thinking, when's she going to get to that? So she would have been the only one to benefit from her parents' death. And of course, Troy by default. Well, the timeline doesn't support them being physically there.
Right.
When the Durhams were murdered. And by now, the couple had lawyered up. They refused to submit fingerprints. They wouldn't take a polygraph. And they were pretty aloof when they spoke to police. Ugh. Obviously, this adds to everyone's suspicion. You know, we always advise lawyer up.
Yes.
Don't take a polygraph.
Yeah.
But everyone side-eyes this.
Right. I get the idea that you're protecting yourself, but at the same time, like, this is your family.
Right.
Like, don't you want to find the answers, like, help in some kind of way?
I know. I always think, like, you know, everyone says get an attorney. And I'm like, what if something happened to my husband and it looked like I did it?
Right.
What's the harm in just saying all the truth to the police? Like, why wouldn't I say every bit of truth? Like, I don't know. We went to bed at this time and we got up at this time and we did this. Why wouldn't I say everything?
Right.
I could understand not wanting to repeat myself 15 times and like being like, that is what happened.
Yeah, like I've told you the truth.
Talking.
Yeah.
Because I can't say it any different. So I think, you know, when people start lawyering up, it's because they're revisited and, you know, will give us a polygraph. I would fail a polygraph.
I would too.
If you asked me what color this room was, I would fail because, well, it's kind of green, kind of bluish green. It's kind of, you know,
it's a light blue. It's yeah.
I overthink everything. There's just no way I could pass a polygraph. And they're looking at the PI, right? So they're looking at Cecil because he was
the one that
one of the finders. Mm-hmm. That guy couldn't even show his face in public without being chastised and accused of committing the murders. Oh,
that is awful. All he did was try to help.
Right. And he had a couple of petty crime things. So people are like, oh, you stole car parts. And this was actually at a different dealership. Apparently in this area, stealing car parts and stuff was like real common. But
interesting.
Yeah. So they're looking at him. They're threatening him. They're accusing him as well. A ritual killing. Affairs. Bobby Joe up to no good. I mean, the more theories that accumulated, the more frustrated investigators became, because if anything is a possibility and nothing is off the table,
yeah,
you almost have a bigger problem than having not enough information to go on. Having too much, having too many options felt crippling to them.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, over the coming years, Bryce Durham's parents never relented. They begged for police to solve their family's murders. Police approached Jenny and questioned her again a couple years after the murders. They wanted to revisit the same elements as before, her relationship with her family, suspicions about her husband. Mm-hmm. And this time, she made it sound like she had a great relationship with her parents. I don't know. Maybe some time had been removed and she only thought of the good old days. I don't know.
Sure.
But actually, when the police came to talk to her, Troy wasn't home at the time. And she told them, you know, I can't talk to you until he gets here.
Oh.
But they just kept asking questions anyway.
Yeah.
And then they confronted
her talking.
Yeah. They confronted her about Troy's behavior, because apparently Troy had been videotaping and photographing nude women.
What?
He had this whole setup where he was having women over and having men come, and he was photographing them having sex, and he was taking pictures
in
and he was
house?
Selling this material. Oh, I don't know if he, Jenny I don't Sue. Think he was doing it at their house. I think he was doing it elsewhere, but Jenny claimed to not know anything about this. And she probably didn't.
Probably not. Oh, my gosh.
So Troy gets home and they confronted him about this sexually explicit footage. And he said, well, there's nothing illegal about what I'm doing.
Oh, okay.
And so Jenny is probably like,
so you are.
Oh, oh, okay. So he said, you know, you're not going to make me a villain because I'm doing this stuff, and you're certainly not going to call me a murderer because I'm doing this stuff. And so he made them leave.
Mm.
In the years following, Jenny and Troy were questioned a few more times, as was Troy's family. You know, I told you, Troy was a scrub, and so was his family. Yeah. His brothers were all into shady dealings, but no matter how many times they were spoken to, they always told law enforcement the same thing. They had no idea about the murders.
Right.
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it might not come as a surprise to you that Jenny and Troy ended up separating in 1975.
Well, good for Jenny Sue.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes me feel better about her.
Yeah. Shortly after Jenny's windfall from her parents' death, Troy began building houses with his brother, using Jenny's money to finance that little operation.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we all knew that was coming. In the blink of an eye, he'd blown through her money. He built him and Jenny a home, but he also built a house for his parents and his brothers.
What in the world?
Yeah. He was like, oh, I got all this money to play with. Jenny ended up finishing school. You know, it took her longer than expected, but she got a bachelor's degree in history, which was something to walk away with, I guess. But she filed for divorce in 1976. I don't think she lost everything, because there was, in the book, it talks about them reaching a settlement in the divorce. Like, he had to, because their money was tied up in properties, he had to relinquish some of those properties.
Good.
And she was able to sell them and get the money. I didn't dive too much into that, but I don't think she was left penniless.
Good.
Okay. But she sure as heck didn't have what she started with. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Lena, decades passed in this case with nothing. Maybe some tips trickled in, but nothing ever amounted to anything. In 2006, a task force was made up of investigators from different agencies around North Carolina who met to go over the case with fresh eyes and a fine-tooth comb. New leads had trickled in over the years, like I said, so they're taking a look at those.
Mm.
And at the time, Watauga County Sheriff Lynn Hageman said, quote, "There have, from day one, been persons of interest. But as in any homicide, developing persons of interest into suspects is often easier said than done. The sheriff continued, I can say that we continue to have leads and are actively looking at following up on these leads. I can also say that many of these leads have occurred within the past 2 years. So it sounds like they were, you know, they were going where the wind was blowing, and at least it was blowing somewhere.
Right.
They felt that that was promising. There was a piece of evidence that they found that they believed could be tested for DNA, but it wasn't stored properly.
No.
Yeah. The DNA testing would have been useless. They're just, it was degraded. Oh. It was not, they couldn't use it. Sheriff Hageman said that they had been rerunning fingerprints through CODIS every year and still had come up with no hits.
So it's not like they weren't doing their due diligence.
So that to me is, you know, you don't hear that in investigations. Right. I'm sure they're doing it. I'm sure they're rerunning things every year.
Yeah.
But maybe they're not.
Yeah.
So for them to be diligent and be like, we're going to rerun these every year, see who's being added to the system. Well, finally, in 2019, 47 years after a husband and wife and their grown son were murdered in their own home, something happened that would finally give police answers to what they've been looking for this whole entire time for nearly 5 decades.
Oh, please tell me.
A man named Shane Burt got involved with the White County Sheriff's Office in Georgia. He was helping them conduct research about notorious crimes in the state of Georgia. So now we're in Georgia. We're not North Carolina.
Right.
He wasn't just some random guy, though. His father was in prison for murder. So he had a, you know, connection, if you will, to violent crimes.
Sure.
Interest. Well, Shane and his father, Billy Burt, were very close. So he visited his father regularly in prison. And on one occasion, his father confessed to another crime that he'd been involved with back in the 70s.
What?
Billy told his son that he was a part of an organized crime ring called the Dixie Mafia. And they'd killed 3 people the mountains of North Carolina during a raging snowstorm.
Oh, wow.
So Shane Burt told investigators that while the men were inside killing the Durhams, the snow fell so heavy outside that they almost couldn't make it out of the house. Like they almost got snowed into that house. The police in Georgia thought that this information might be of interest to the Watauga County Sheriff's Office in North Carolina, because the Dixie Mafia, who were responsible for dozens of violent crimes in Georgia in the 60s and 70s, included another crime that had striking similarities to the Durham murders. Mr. and Mrs. Oliver Fleming, who'd lived in Wrens, Georgia, were killed in their home the year after the Durhams were murdered. According to court records, Mr. Fleming was a used car lot owner.
Okay.
His home was ransacked. He and his wife were both bound with bedsheets and strangled to death. Their car was abandoned on the side of the road. And the motive was money.
Okay.
In this case, in the Fleming case.
So money was taken from their home.
Right. Apparently, they had like jars of money buried.
Oh, okay.
That's so something granddad would have done. After learning the identities of the men implicated in the Durham murders, Billy Sunday Burt, Bobby Jean Gaddis, I don't care. You're dead and you're a murderer. Charles David Reed and Billy Wayne Davis, Sheriff Len Hageman, who had been on the Durham case for years, wanted to go look these guys in the eyes.
Yeah.
Like he was like, I can't believe I finally have some names.
Right.
Sadly, all this time later, only one remaining mafia member was still alive.
Really?
And that was Billy Wayne Davis. Like the others in their day, he was a career criminal, and he was in prison in the Georgia Department of Corrections in Augusta, Georgia. Sheriff Hageman interviewed Billy, now in his 80s.
What?
In, yeah, 19. He went in 2019, 2020, 2021. And he had these conversations with Billy Wayne Davis, and he admitted to being the getaway driver in the Durham's murder and the Fleming murder. And he confirmed the involvement of the other three men in the crime. Probably the most shocking thing that came from those interviews was that the murder of the Durham family was a professional hit.
Ooh, okay. Ordered by...
He didn't say.
No!
I don't know if he wouldn't say or if he didn't know. My instinct is to say that he didn't know. I feel like these organized crime rings, it's like one person knows what they need to know.
Okay.
And the other people just are
do
just
what they're told.
Do what they're told.
Yeah.
Now, Shane Burt, Billy Burt's son, told investigators that his dad was pissed because they were supposed to find a ton of money at the Durham home. But it wasn't there.
Oh. Okay.
So the motive was money.
Money.
February 8th, 2022, the Watauga County Sheriff's Office announced that they had solved the 50-year-old case. Unfortunately, Bryce's parents had died before the case would be solved.
Aww.
Or partially solved. Because if it was a hit, like you said, who right. ordered the hit?
Mm-hmm.
Shane told investigators that it was either a nephew or son-in-law
mm-hmm.
that had told the mafia members about the money that they'd found in the Durham home. But there was no large sum of money there that they found anyway.
That would explain Troy going to the dealership saying, where is the thing? Where is it?
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So if it was about money, why didn't they take that bank deposit bag? There were hundreds of dollars in there. Why didn't they take Virginia's purse that had money in it?
Yeah, that is so
Bobby
confusing.
And Bryce's wallet.
Still so many questions.
Here's, you know, we talk about, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about outliers.
Uh-huh.
We talk a lot about, MOs mm-hmm. and patterns. And that's what investigators are looking for. They're using their knowledge of pattern behavior
right.
to inform. But we would not be smart if we ignored, well, what if? Mm-hmm. What if? What if these guys were tearing up this house looking for something so specific
uh-huh.
that they missed things that were right in front of their face?
Yeah.
No, what
that
if
makes so much sense.
One of the guys went to go out the door and said, dude, we've got to get out of here because the snow is piling up. They ran out of time.
Yeah.
They ran out of time.
They were in such a hurry.
The silverware left behind in the truck.
What?
That they're just dumb.
Yeah.
Okay. The only explanation I have for that is that they just were trying to get the heck out of there.
Yeah. That's too odd.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
And I think about this all the time in cases when we see ransackings and, you know, drawers overturned and you're like, nobody does that. Nobody goes into someone's home. Like,
yeah.
Do you keep wads of cash in your panty drawer, Lena?
No,
like, I don't.
No.
So, it feels weird when people are turning out drawers and dumping things.
Right.
But then you have something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me also, because Billy Wayne Davis was supposedly in the car this
okay.
whole time. So like I said earlier, it feels like one person knew the thing.
Right.
They were looking for money. Just look for the money.
Yeah.
And the others were just doing what they're told and they're not really informed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, they didn't even look behind the door in Jenny's old room. They didn't see the gun safe. They didn't take things of value that they could have. I mean, someone thought to gather the silverware.
Yeah.
But then they left it.
So odd.
It is odd.
Was Troy ever questioned on what he was looking for at the dealership?
I'm sure that was a question. It wasn't. It wasn't called out.
Okay.
And maybe it was, and I missed it in the book. But I would encourage you guys, if you want to get into the weeds on this, go read the book. There's so much I have to leave out just for time's sake. The book is so in depth, including a murder that happened, like the wife of the person who disappeared. She chose February 3rd, 1972 as this guy's murder date. And he was supposedly a victim of Billy Burt in Georgia. So this death, this realization was supposed to cast doubt on his involvement in the Durham murder.
Oh.
But it really wasn't, because this man disappeared and, you know, he was his body was found 4 years later. So they couldn't really determine a date, but that's just the last day his wife saw him.
Okay.
So there's little things like that in the book that you can go off on to rabbit holes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I really enjoyed it. It was very in-depth. He did a really good job researching this case. But, you know, Billy Wayne Davis is the only person involved in those murders that is still alive. And he is serving a life sentence in the state medical prison in Augusta, Georgia.
And is he still alive?
He's still alive. Oh. I even before we started recording this episode, I checked, because you remember when we did the Blue Mound Massacre murders? Yeah, yeah. And then turns out, Basil Cotton was dead. So, yeah, apparently he's still alive. If he's dead, I didn't see an obituary. But he's been in prison since 1986, if you can believe that.
Oh. Wow.
He was never charged with the Durham murders because there's no physical evidence to support his confession.
Right.
And he'll be dead soon. And they know that.
Yeah.
I mean, they did talk to Jenny. And they said, look, we solved the case, and she thanked them. But what do you think, Lena?
I'd like to know what Jenny Sue has to say about Troy today. Like, what would she say about
him? So she still doesn't believe
that he had anything.
That he would have done something like that. Here's my thought.
Mm-hmm.
Troy and his brothers were known petty criminals. They were known to hang around the riffraff.
Right.
Maybe they said something in passing like, well, yeah, my wife's parents are well off and I know they keep money in the house. Okay. You know, maybe they said something or rattled their mouth off in front of someone.
Yeah.
And that information got back to the Stixie Mafia organization.
Yeah.
I don't know that Troy is smart enough to have arranged all of this.
I can probably agree with you.
And I couldn't find this information, but I don't even think that phone call was real of Virginia.
That's what's confusing
to me. I think one of those guys called him and said, it's done, or they're dead, or whatever it was.
Oh.
But Troy, come on, he was involved in some way.
I have to agree with that.
Him and his family, I mean, they swooped in there like a hobo on a bologna sandwich. I mean, they just, you know what I mean?
Like,
they were ready and waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
Jenny Sue, I don't think she would have agreed to kill her parents.
Yeah.
Maybe when they were murdered, she was like, life is easier now. Maybe that was her initial thought.
Well, he sounds like some kind of, at least some kind of narcissist, in a way. And
oh, for sure.
So I would say he probably talked bad about her parents this whole time and got her believing what bad people they were.
Yeah.
Like, your parents did this to you.
They took away our car.
Yeah. And
yeah,
they treated you so bad. And so she starts believing all this.
Yeah. And he had isolated her from, and we see that all the time with domestic violence, don't we? He had isolated her from her family. She wasn't really speaking to her family. So you're right.
Yeah.
He's filling her head.
Yeah. So it's a play in her head. And so she's like, well, my parents weren't that great to me. And then she can kind of separate herself from the grief of it.
Yeah.
Like you said. And now she's like, oh, now I don't have to deal with such a bad family.
Yeah. And oh, by the way, she gets older and more mature and she's like, oh, they just really were trying to
protect
me from people like Troy.
Yeah. That's so sad. Like, oh,
so
it's like I tell my nephews all the time, like, I'm doing this because I love you.
Exactly.
Like, it's not because I don't want you to go have fun or I don't want you to whatever.
Isn't it great that they can understand you?
They do.
I try to explain that to a 4-year-old. I don't want you to run in the house because I don't want you to bust your head open.
Right. I don't want you to pull that string because the garage door is going to pull.
I don't want you to do this because of that. It's like, it's just for your protection. And I had rules.
Yeah.
I, looking back now, realized that I wasn't as sheltered as I thought I was back then, but I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons. I wasn't allowed to watch Dawson's Creek and things like that. And it's because that was too adult.
Right.
That had themes in it that my parents did not want. They wanted to hold on to my youth.
Yeah.
As long as they could. Yeah. And I understand now.
Now you can appreciate
it. I can appreciate it. And, you know, I think the Durhams were just doing what they were taught.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I've had conversations with my mom about her strict upbringing and those strict rules and rigid guidelines were passed down to me. And she was just doing what she was taught. And so the Durhams were just protecting their kids in the way that they felt was necessary.
Right.
I don't know about Virginia making fun of her son in front of his friends. I didn't see anything that his friends come forward and said, she was terrible to him.
Yeah.
That was all coming from Jenny.
Gotcha.
So maybe she had built this
idea,
this resentment in her head. And like you said, Troy probably was over there in her ear 24/7.
Yeah.
Brainwashing her. And maybe both things are true. Maybe both things are true. Maybe Virginia was...
Well, that's why I'd like to hear what she would have to say today. If someone was to question her, what was it like back then?
Yeah.
If she would be like, okay.
So she, you know, the last we heard from her was when the case was supposedly solved. Who ordered the hit?
Right.
And when you think of a hit, you think of someone collecting money for doing this.
Yes.
I don't know if back then this Dixie Mafia operated on, look, you can haul what you get, like what you find you can take. I don't know if that was their payment or what.
So they took the silverware. But then they left it in the car.
Idiots.
I'm so confused about that. But.
I know. I, like I said, all my brain can come up with is that they were so focused on finding this large sum of money hidden somewhere that they ignored all the low-hanging fruit.
I completely agree with that.
And like I said, the Fleming murder, the murder of the Flemings that had so many... similar hallmarks of the Durham family murders. Well, the Durhams were murdered before the Flemings. So maybe they learned a thing or two.
Okay.
From the Durham murders.
And it wasn't snowing outside.
It wasn't snowing as far as I know.
Yeah.
But they were able to be like, okay, we need to tie them up with bed sheet. It was a little more organized than the Durham murders. Although the Durham murders seemed pretty organized. I guess the robbery portion of it was a little more thought out.
There's some things that we could have done better.
Right. But let's definitely ditch the car on the side of the road. That was great. Let's do that again sometime. But. Isn't this a nuts case? Like, you see why Ashley writes and she's like, you should look into this case. And I'm like looking and I'm like, wait a minute, what? you know, and she had told me, you know, they recently solved the case, but they still don't know who ordered the hit. And I was all in. I could not stop. And then I found the book.
Okay.
It's the only book written about these crimes.
Really?
And the title, Convoluted,
uh-huh,
is absolutely the title.
Yeah.
Just absolutely.
No better title.
No better title. So yeah, that's what I have. That's where we're at today. There have been no other updates. I think, you know, the writer of the book in his conclusion chapter said he doesn't like to be a fence straddler. I don't know how he put it, but he said, I'm not one of those people that says, well, I don't know. But in this case, he says he can't really form an opinion. Now, the police, the investigators who've had their brain in this case for years, decades, longer than we've been alive, Elena, they think that these confessions are real. They think that all the evidence lines up. They've had their eyeballs on the crime scene photos. They've had their hands in it.
Yeah.
So as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go with the fact that they've got the four men. They know the four men. It lines up.
It really does. I mean,
and then, you know, someone mentions it's the son-in-law or the nephew. They couldn't remember. And it all makes sense.
It really does.
Where's the evidence, though? Even in the 70s. I mean, I know they didn't have the technology that we have today, but I'm just like,
As well as the sheriff tried to preserve the scene, you would think that they would have some thing.
Lena, you live with three men.
Yeah.
Can you imagine them not leaving evidence behind that they were in your home? Like, if you think of three guys.
Especially if they were in a hurry.
Especially if they were in a hurry. Exactly.
Wow.
It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. And it is so, I know we say the word senseless all the time, but it's so stupid.
Yeah.
Do you feel stupid? You're rotting in prison and for what?
Right. And that's what my thought is. Was it worth it?
What did you even take?
Like, tell me more. Don't just tell me that, oh, hey, I was involved in this. But, like, tell me why and who and
they just, what they for. Didn't care. They
just to be.
They would murder for a penny, it seems like. They were willing to risk. I mean, risk versus reward. I mean, you're willing to kill people.
Yeah.
And when you rope multiple people into this killing spree,
it's just to see what you can get away with at that point.
Yeah, they didn't care.
No.
I mean, are you kidding me? They couldn't have cared.
I would have liked to know what Troy's reaction was when he heard about this confession.
Right.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
I
saw no updates about Troy. And it just, I don't know. I just, the phone call from Virginia, why would she call her daughter's house, who her daughter doesn't give a crap about her?
Yeah.
Like, they weren't really on speaking terms. Like, I don't feel like that's who she would call.
Call the police. That just makes no
sense. Right.
No.
And Virginia said there are three N-words in here. Come on. Troy.
And so that's him throwing off the case.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. But yes, he probably was just throwing them off.
Yep. That's exactly what it is.
Another thing.
I'm convinced.
To support that he knew.
Yeah.
We have cracked the case.
Goodness.
Yeah, this one was wild. And Daniel kept saying, I thought you were done with your story. And I'm like, I am done. But I just like, I can't quit looking into this.
You dove into the deep end and you were trying to swim out.
I know. And there was at one point, I just had to say, okay, this is it for my notes. Because I could, the book is so good, guys. I'm not a reader, but when it comes to things like this, I love the research. Mm-hmm. And you can tell this author really put in the time.
Yeah.
Again, let me just repeat the name of the book. Hang on. The book is called Convoluted, The 1972 Durham Family Homicide. And I'll link it in the show notes. I bought the Amazon Kindle version. So it was, it was so good. I just kept going back through it. I kept being like, but what about this? And digging for answers. It was just really good. And my heart breaks that a family was, they made it home in a snowstorm, like from a snowstorm. And they were like, we're home now. We can eat our chicken.
Yeah.
There was apparently they were playing cards. So wholesome. And they had gotten home safely and they were in the safety of their own home.
I mean, that's it. The American family just living their lives, doing their thing, trying to be successful and raise their kids in
the best way they know how.
Right.
To protect them.
And then it's taken all away. For what?
For what? Not even a bag of silverware.
Right. Oh, wow.
It's tough. And we have not forgotten you, Durhams. I know that it took a long time to get here, but nobody ever forgot about you. And we hope that you guys are at peace.
Yeah.
Fly high, angels.
Yes. Oh, wow. Well, I am glad you dove into that. That was very interesting. Thank you for telling us about their story.
Lena kept making these faces like she was really
confused.
And I was like, wait, what? Is there a bug behind me?
No, I'm like, I'm trying to comprehend why.
I know. She was so confused. And I was too. Like, it just...
Because you're continuing to talk and I'm still stuck on something else over here. And I'm like, wait, I'm processing. But yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for researching that and telling their story. That was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. We'll see you next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.